Hello and welcome back to another episode of Informed
and Empowered
with Khawla
and Grace.
And today we'll be answering the question of
how private and public individual privacy rights and protections differ and what that means for our digital society. So how did we get here, Khawla?
Well, it all started when we were covering a case that involved Hogan, the wrestler, where his privacy rights were infringed upon, and he had a case against the Gawker Media where they had leaked his sex tape.
Yeah, crazy.
Mm-hmm. They leaked his sex tape, and what even more scandalizing about it was that sex tape was not only infringing on his private rights and personal things were being leaked, but it was also with his best friend's wife.
Yeah.
So it was even a bigger scandal, and it created more
controversy.
More controversy on his part. And it was interesting because it piqued our interest. It was like, okay, we've seen other celebrities' sex tapes get leaked, but this one stood out to me specifically because of how big of a win it was.
Yeah, and also, what was the excuse that Gawker gave?
Gawker was trying to say that since Hogan openly talked about his sex life and he consistently made jokes, talked about it, and was very interactive in the media, they had the right to leak a sex tape. But because it's not, well, the reason the court siding with Hogan instead of Gawker was because, for one, Gawker had no right or no purpose to release the sex tape. So there was no importance to it. There was nothing that they needed it. Like, there was no necessity for it. Two, it is very private and something that shouldn't be shared with the public.
Yeah.
He also, he did a defamation case because a lot of his name was dragged through the ground, for one, because he was sleeping with his best friend's wife. And two, people were making fun of him. His name was being dragged. He lost money. He lost opportunities.
Yeah, he was no longer a wrestler. He was just scandalous.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So from that, he was able to win, I believe, around $140 billion? Or was it 44?
It was a lot of money.
It was a lot.
I think it's million, though, not billion. Oh. Million would be, like, insane. But it could be. Just say a lot of money. He was able to win a lot of money.
Yes, he was able to win a lot of money. And he won so much that Gawker Media actually went out of business. They went bankrupt after that. And it's like, you think about it, especially with our generation, what we grew up with, Kim's sex tape that got leaked and how they became super popular. And it's like, okay, but for her, it did the opposite. It actually gave her more opportunities. It gave them the show. Their family became, I mean, they were already popular, but it popularized them even more. So, for her, what's the difference between those two cases? And as celebrities, what's the limit to what they consider private and public?
Exactly. Like, just talking about that case kind of just launched us into that investigation of that line between private and public. And through just, like, all of our research of a bunch of different cases, we kind of came to the conclusion that despite follower count, despite eyes on you, everyone is human at the end of the day and really just deserves the right to privacy despite their presence online, you know?
Exactly. And especially with today's day and age where so many people are being thrown into the media and thrown into the public eye because it's so easy through TikTok, through Instagram, but specifically TikTok, we've seen many teenagers, many people that literally their careers started on TikTok on accident. It wasn't even purposeful.
So just with that, and also just the evolution of AI, like the unknown that is AI just brings an entire new element into just our research, and also just the existence of like deepfakes. Do you own your face? Do you own your voice? Which our voice, the voice we will talk about later. What do you own? What do you have the right to? Does it matter in the court how public you make yourself out to be? Does it matter if you're a private individual? That's really what we'll be exploring today.
When it comes to people's faces, usually your face as a public figure is actually not protected unless, such as we've seen with Kim, where she had trademarked, well, legally trademarked her daughter North's name because she wanted control over who can use it and where it can be used. She has had a lawsuit against a brand company that used her to advertise their materials, and at the time she couldn't sue them because she did not have rightful ownership of her face being used.
It was a very big case. The reason that a lot of people don't really know about it, though, is that she lost. The reason that a lot of people don't know about it is because she actually lost and her motion was actually denied. And instead, the court just gave her a lot of money. And instead of stopping Misguided USA, which was the brand that used her photos for endorsing their product, the court actually just decided to give Kim Kardashian $2 million for damages and kind of emotional distress and the use of her body and everything to endorse the product. But they did not find that that her motion for default judgment against it was worth and it did have standing. So it is a pretty interesting case, and it kind of leads us to think, like, I wonder how much does the court really just also throw money at things? Instead of really giving her liberties and setting a precedent, the court just kind of said, well, here's a bunch of money for the lawsuit and for the lawyer fees and all of that. So that's another interesting factor, just, like, the court kind of using money as well, mm-hmm. just to silence people.
Exactly, because it's also interesting, it has you questioning, where did this start? Like, there has to have been cases beforehand that have covered this topic and at least gave them a basis to go off of,
yeah.
which led us to answering that question when we found out that the first publicity case that was identified was back in 1953, and the case was called Helena Liberties versus Topps Chewing Gum, Inc. It's where in Helena the court pointed out that the right of publicity was not based on protecting a person's privacy, but on preventing the unauthorized use of a person's name or likeness. So your face mm-hmm. is not protected, but your name is, which connects yes. to why Kim had gone on to trademark her daughter's name, because that way she can protect her in a way. And then it has you also questioning, well, North didn't choose to be famous. It was just because her family's famous. So where does kids' protection come from if they're in the public eye because of their parents? Do they have more protection or yeah. less protection? Mm-hmm. And how do they determine how much of their information can be released?
Yeah, and because of the court's history of siding with a lot of the parents' discretion, I feel like we did find in the research that children don't have a lot of control over really how much they're on the media. It's up to the parents. Am I going to film my daughter's face and post it? Am I going to film my son doing his baseball game and it shows his school logo on the back of his shirt? You know, different things like that. It's really up to the parents' discretion, which leads us to think, I mean, there definitely should be children protection laws out there, but it seems like there's really not a lot as of now.
At all. What the farthest thing I've seen is when celebrity parents won't say their kids' names.
Mm-hmm.
They won't publicly say their age.
Face.
They'll blur their faces. Mm-hmm. They won't take them out. If they take them out, they'll have a blanket over them, covering them. They're always protecting them. So it's like they're taking that extension to protect them, but where's the law taking that extension to protect
exactly.
them?
Exactly. Yeah.
So does it have to be taken by their own hands?
Yeah, exactly. And also down to just, like, activities and back to the Gawker case. I also found in my research in Galea v. Onassis that the court actually held in this one and made a big decision to shield intimate and personal characteristics and activities from the public gaze. This is to have moments of freedom from just the assault of the public gaze and the world to just have a piece of their lives, like going to a restaurant, different things like that. And this was so that they could achieve some measure of tranquility in their life, these celebrities, without which life loses its sweetness. I really like that quote, life loses its sweetness. It really mm-hmm. just shows that, like, if everywhere you go, if everything that you do is under the public gaze and scrutinized, life can become almost like you are just starring in a movie. You always have a face on. You never get a time to rest and just be yourself and go to dinner with your family or your friends and not have,
exactly.
you know, paparazzi down your back. And so even that, just that quote, is very important. Like, what is life if you are always unprotected and your privacy just doesn't exist?
I mean, the only thing that we found that protects was a California Civil Code mm-hmm. section 3344, was it provides that it's unlawful for the purpose of advertising or selling to knowingly use another's name, voice, signature, photograph, or likeness without the person's prior consent. But again, it's not protecting you, like your face.
Yeah.
Why is our face, I mean, it is to the public, so we can't control that. I mean, we see paparazzi all the time taking pictures of celebrities, but it's like, they chose but didn't choose it at the same time. We're all still human, like you said. When is it a stop button for them? When is it a break for them? When can they go private? Because if they're always consistently a public figure, when can they be considered private?
Yeah, it seems that it's just like, it's all or nothing, you know? You could either have your life or you could just try not to. But it's even hard. Like, if we think back, there's obviously the famous pop singer Taylor Swift. She went on years of just hiatus, of nobody knowing where she lived, like what was going on with her life. And I feel like that was the closest she could get to privatization. But she still had millions of people following her music, trying to find her, trying to, like, it'd be like, oh, Taylor Swift sighting here. It's still, you still have all those people wondering about you, consuming your content, despite even going on a hiatus and not talking to the public. You could still have a bunch of people's eyes on your content. And so it's just, it's a really complex issue. And I feel like in the legal realm, we don't have a lot of positive results.
Exactly. I mean, it's also interesting, as you brought up singers, because singers, the main thing about them is their voice. And that's protected. Like we've seen in a case, like we said, it's interesting how when it comes to musicians or singers, how they can protect their voices. Like we've seen in a case where Bette Midler knew her rights of publicity and she used her rights for publicity to prevent use of any sound-alike singers to sell cars. Specifically for Ford Motor Co., they hired one of her old backup singers to sing on a commercial. After Midler declined to do the ad, they wanted to use something that's the most like her.
Interesting.
So that's why they used her backup singer. And since she gave no permission to do this, they had been able to use the since she wouldn't do it, they used the backup singer to imitate her voice and the likeness of her voice, and they did the commercial. And they actually fooled a lot of people. She was very on point with sounding really close to Midler. So it worked, and she fooled a lot of people, but then when Midler found out, she sued, and the court ruled that there was misappropriation of Midler's rights of publicity to her singing voice. And it cost $400,000 for Ford, because they used it without her permission, and by law, her voice is protected.
Yeah, that is very interesting that, yeah, once again, we draw the line here between voice and face, which, I mean, half of me would argue face is even more vulnerable, but at the same time, voice can also be used for some dubious things. So it's hard, because it's like lesser of two evils, you know?
Exactly.
Why can't we have both? Why can't we have protections against both?
We've seen celebrities have both with Dolly Parton. I mean, nobody sees what she actually looks like.
That's true.
Because she would go out, she'll do her thing, because she created most, like, pretty much a character of herself. So the way she dresses, her hair, her makeup, she
very
makes
particular.
It so, exactly, she's particular. If she goes out like that, people immediately know who she is.
Yeah.
But without that, it's like she removes that facade. She removes her public persona, and then she gets to be private as well. So it's like, you have to be two different people to be able to have the best
that's
of both
true.
Worlds.
It also kind of depends on your relevancy. Like, I'm not saying that Dolly Parton is not relevant now, but she was a lot more relevant, like, back when she started her singing career. So we could also think of, like, right now, somebody who's very relevant is Chappell Roan. We all know Chappell Roan. She is also very famous for almost, like, drag and doing very dramatic makeup and hair. But we can also see her breaking under the tensions of being a celebrity.
Exactly.
She started just lashing out at different people. She has videos of just screaming online. She has videos of, I said I was going to be a singer, and I said I was going to be this until people found my family, until people found my address, until people started using my name and face for bad things. But that comes back to our point. You can't just undo and take back and go back to when you had 300 followers. You can't do that. And so it's really interesting just seeing these people just break under the spotlight and what happens to them. But maybe in 20, 30 years, she won't be as relevant and she can enjoy that privacy again. Because it really just also comes down to the trends of society. Okay, we're going to make boost this this musician, and then in 20 years she's almost coined as quote-unquote irrelevant. So
exactly, or canceled because she's ungrateful for the success that
she's had. Yeah, that's another thing people have been saying. Oh, well, then you shouldn't have, you know, put your stuff out there. You're ungrateful. Like, so many people want this fame. But it can be very hard, and people need to recognize the mental health challenges that come with being under the spotlight. I couldn't imagine so many people looking up to me, commenting good, bad things, anything they want. You know, so it's complex.
Yeah, especially with social media these days. I mean, people have so much easier access to you. It's not like back in the day you can go undercover. Like, it's a lot easier. The only thing you have to worry about is the paparazzi.
Yeah.
Now, it's like everybody's a paparazzi because you can just pull out your phone and take a picture. Or they post a story, people easily find out where they're at.
And right. It's like, I know it's scary.
It is. One text, somebody can see you in the street. One text sent to a friend. One text sent in social media on Twitter. Everybody can find you and come meet you up. And I mean, social media can be a good and bad thing. And we've seen it. We've seen it. We even in our last podcast, we discussed how social media affects our protest rights and how we've seen people use it. But it's also interesting when it comes to celebrity cases.
Yeah.
Because it's talking about defamation. Johnny Depp versus Amber Heard.
Everyone knows about this one.
Everybody knows.
And if you don't, here we go. Let's dive into it.
This one was a big court case because it was between the star Johnny Depp, I mean, who doesn't know him?
Yes.
And his ex-wife, who was an actress, Amber Heard, and was once publicized defamation cases in recent times.
The most.
And then Ms. Heard published an article in the Washington Post that insulted that her ex-husband, Depp, had been violent towards her. So her case that she was arguing was that she had gone public with the abuse, and she wrote an article entailing that it was true and that he was an abuser, which went on to lose a lot of jobs for Depp, especially during that time.
I mean, they paused a lot of the things that they were working on with him and were like, oh, we might have to find someone else. We wouldn't want to because of his amazing acting history. A lot of things were paused. A lot of things were stopped because of this case.
Exactly. So what did he go on to do? He went on to sue her for defamation. And now you're like, okay, so but what if she has truth to it? That's the whole thing, was that she didn't have concrete evidence to be able to prove her case.
Back up.
Exactly. And for her to go out and write an article, and that article had gone on to affect him so much, not only, you could argue mentally,
financially,
but financially as well.
Big one.
His reputation was dragged through the ground. Everybody was talking about it.
Yeah.
So then during the court, we saw a lot of it was televised.
Yes.
The whole thing was televised to us.
I don't know about you, my TikTok was fully just clips of it.
That's all we saw for, like, the whole case. We saw edits of Amber Heard arguing her case.
Yeah,
Johnny Depp. Yeah, Johnny Depp eating candy.
Yeah.
It's like, so much. That's all we saw. And it actually worked in Johnny Depp's favor.
Yes.
Because it ended up...
Oh, he ended up being a sympathetic plaintiff.
Exactly.
And he ended up actually gaining the support of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Which, in the end, helped him win that court case. And the award for him was...
$10 million. That's a lot of...
That's a lot of money. $10 million for a defamation case.
Yeah.
That is insane. And, it went back to show... What if it wasn't televised? Who would have won?
I know, that is the question, too. Once again, we have so many factors in this case, which just proves how our research is just... It was difficult, but also we tried to conceptualize it the best we could. But there's just so many factors. And another one is just, the role of the public. Mm-hmm. If the public sees your case, are you going to have more support? What if Kim K had the public... weighing in on her case, do you think she would have had a different approach? Do you think she might have won? Would it not have just been money thrown at her? Would it have been a better precedent made? I mean, who knows? And a lot of that is really just up to the discretion, once again, of the courts.
Exactly. And now, today's ad is sponsored by PBS Standard, answering your questions about defamation. Now, what is defamation? Defamation is any false information that harms the reputation of a person, business, or organization. Defamation includes both libel and slander. Libel generally refers to the defamatory statement that are published or broadcasted more permanent, while slander refers to verbal defamatory statements that are more fleeting. While defamation allegations are common legal problems for media organizations, journalists, and documentary filmmakers, can reduce the likelihood of a lawsuit by following ethical guidelines such as the PBS Additional Standards, which stresses the importance of accuracy and fairness. Now, if someone sues me for defamation, what must they prove to win the case? Well, the law of each state defines defamation in specific ways. In general, a plaintiff who files a lawsuit asserting that a statement you published is defamatory must show that 1. Published a statement, meaning that if it was read or viewed by at least one other person besides the plaintiff, stories broadcast on television or published on international world qualities. It also has to be identified the plaintiff. You have to clearly identify who you're talking about. So identification can occur by naming the plaintiff or showing the plaintiff's image through a photo or drawing. Identification also can occur by describing the plaintiff through recognizable descriptive characteristics. It has to have harmed the plaintiff's reputation. A statement can be per se defamatory, meaning that words are defamatory on their face without any further information or context. Asserations, examples like asserations of criminal behavior, incompetence, or sexual promiscuity. Sometimes, however, a statement that might appear innocent becomes defamatory when considered in greater context. For example, asserting that John is dating Jane could be defamatory if Jane is married to someone else. Number 4. Made a false statement of fact. Statements incapable of being proven true or false, known as pure opinion, are not defamatory. Example, Jane is a terrible boss. Rhetorical hyperbole or statements that cannot reasonably be understood as stating an actual fact are also defamatory. Courts carefully evaluate the context of the statement to determine whether it can be proven true or false. Importantly, statements consisting of both personal opinions and verified facts can be defamatory. Last but not least, you have to have at least some level of fault. A plaintiff who is public official or public figure must prove that you published the statement with actual malice. A higher level of fault, while a plaintiff who is private individually generally must prove that you acted negligently, a lower level fault. Now, how do you know if my subject is a public official? Although there's no bright line rule for who qualifies, a public official includes someone who has position of authority in the government, someone who holds elective offices such as president, a member of Congress, or a state governor, as well as someone who does not hold elected offices but nevertheless has or appears to have substantial responsibilities for or control over the conduct of government affairs. The U.S. Supreme Court has recognized that plaintiffs classified as public officials must show that the defendant acted with actual malice, the highest level of fault in publishing the defamatory statement. Now, who's considered a public figure? A public figure is someone who, although not governor official, still power to influence over society. There are two types of public figures: all-purpose public figures and limited-purpose public figures. All-purpose public figures occupy positions of such preeminent power pervasive power and influence that they deem public figures for all purposes. Typically, these are individuals with widespread fame, such as celebrities and professional athletes, like public officials. Plaintiffs classified as all-purpose public figures must show that the defendant acted with actual malice in publishing the defamatory statement. Now, a limited purpose figure, public figure, have thrust themselves to the forefront of particular public controversies in order to influence the resolution of issues involved. Typically, these are individuals who have gained prominence in a particular field or in connection with a particular controversy. Businesses can also be classified as public figures. Courts evaluate factors such as whether the business is well known by the average person in the area where the defamatory statement was circulated, whether the business is regulated by the government, and whether the business has been intensely scrutinized by the media. Now that comes to ask the question of who is considered a private person then? A private person consists of any individual who do not qualify as public officials or public figures. As detailed above, the Supreme Court has determined that plaintiffs who are private figures must at least show the defendant acted negligently, a lower standard of fault than actual malice, in publishing the defamatory statement. However, some states require private figures to prove more than negligence in cases involving matters of public interest. Stations are advised to consult with their local councils about applicable local defendant laws. Now, back to the episode.
Okay, ready? Okay. All right, so coming back from our ad, we're now going to be discussing the private individual and how that might differ from the public. So, we do have a good case for y'all. It's going to be Time Inc., which is the New York Times magazine. V. Firestone. So this one deals with Mary Alice Firestone, who is a wealthy socialite, who sued Times for libel after they published an article about her divorce from Russell Firestone, who's the heir to the Firestone fortune, pretty famous. The article reported that the divorce had been granted on grounds of extreme cruelty and adultery, which she claimed was false and defamatory. The Times argued that because Firestone was a public figure, she had to meet the New York Times Co. v. Sullivan's actual malice standard, which was a precedent set in that case, providing that the statement was made with knowledge of its falsity or reckless disregard for the truth.
Now, the Supreme Court's decision went on to rule in favor of Mary Alice Firestone because they stated that she was not a public figure for the purpose of the New York Times standard, even though the divorce had been received media attention and she had held press conferences. Therefore, she did not need to prove actual malice to recover damages for defamation. The court remanded the case to determine whether the statements were false and the defamatory under state defamation law standard, which would require only negligence, not actual malice. Mm-hmm. So the significance of this case was pretty strong.
Yeah, the case helped to clarify who is a public figure in defamation law, establishing that mere involvement in a matter of public interest, like a divorce or just being connected to a public figure, is not enough to strip individuals of normal protections against defamation. So this was just a very big thing of also defining the line in defamation law between a public and a private individual, and really just ensuring that those private individuals do have those rights to privacy and protections against defamation. So a really important case and vital to defamation law. So privacy rights in the U.S. are not exactly specifically stated, but rather inferred from various constitutional amendments that have been shaped largely by that judicial interpretation. We do get that verbiage of penumbra of rights,
like privacy in a lot of like abortion or physical autonomy cases. But for the purpose of our research, we're going to look more into a case called Katz v. United States, where Charles Katz was suspected of illegal gambling across state lines. To collect evidence, the FBI placed electronic listening devices on the outside of a public phone booth that Katz regularly used. They did not obtain a warrant for this, but the recordings did be used as evidence to convict Katz. He challenged the conviction, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court, where a 7-1 decision actually ruled in favor of Katz. The decision overturned the earlier precedent that the Fourth Amendment only protected against physical intrusions in Olmstead v. United States, and held that it was not just... people weren't just protected from... expanded the Fourth Amendment to protect people, not just places, which is and established the reasonable expectation of privacy test. This was very important because it's also been used in later cases to protect people from, like, from the FBI to kind of see your phone as a little mechanism, like a computer, that holds a lot of information and that does require a warrant, and always will require a warrant to obtain access to. Going out into places and being bugged is not something that can just happen. The FBI cannot just take your information on your phone. They can?
Well, unless, because your face is a public, is for the public and is not protected, so is your fingerprints. If right. you have... your password can be opened or your phone can be opened by just scanning your face, technically, the police can have access to your phone and information on your phone.
That is true, actually. That is true. If you have your Face ID, I would recommend not having Face ID.
Or fingerprint.
Or, yeah, if your fingerprints are in the system, those are obviously not protected, which is a really good development to mention. They do need a warrant for your phone, but if you do have that Face ID, you're not as protected as the next person who has an Android and only has a code that they need to put in.
Exactly.
Well, I'm sure Androids have Face ID now, but...
who knows?
Who knows anymore? I don't know. But, yeah, so it was a very big landmark case for the private individual, so...
I mean, the number one thing that it does come up with our rights, specifically as private figures, is our data. Mm-hmm. Because to the world, that is what they can make the most money out of. And that brings us to our next ad break. Today's sponsor is Gestia. Gestia will go on to describe and inform people about data breaches and consumers' legal rights to privacy. As private individuals, we are considered consumers. Consumers routinely entrust businesses with personal information, including their names and addresses, financial account numbers, medical information, and other information commonly deemed as private. Our legal systems have certain laws and enforcement mechanisms to protect consumers from data breaches that could leave them vulnerable to identity theft and other illegal schemes. Courts have also recognized a general right to privacy. Most laws dealing with privacy of consumers' personal information fall into two categories. Laws that prohibit accessing computer systems without authorization, and laws that protect specific types of information. Now, back to the episode. To come to conclude this episode, we want to encourage everybody to be very, very careful on what you guys post on social media.
Yeah.
As everything you guys post is now for the public. It is now able to be used against you. Mm-hmm. And just because Instagram says it's only 24 hours or because Snapchat will take it off, that does not mean it's not taken. Somebody can screenshot, record, send it out. And mm-hmm. it doesn't just disappear. It will forever be there. So be careful what you post.
Yeah, additionally, like, with the job search, whatever you post, people who are gonna be employing you could totally see it. So also, I know this doesn't go fully with our research, but it is just another call to action. Be careful what you post. Don't have Face ID. Okay, I'm telling you, if you wanna be protected, be silent whenever they arrest you and don't have face ID and get a lawyer. There's so much that has to do with privacy and the public, and also just be very cautious what you're commenting as well. Be very cautious with what you say about public figures. At the end of the day, they deserve as much respect as the next person, and having a parasocial relationship is also very unhealthy. So just take what we've said and consider that Taylor Swift, Kim Kardashian, Kanye, everybody is a person, okay? No matter what they're going through, whatever mental challenges they're going through, we don't see it. We only see the happiness, we only see the bright side. So just be cautious from what you're commenting, what you're posting, what you have on your phone, everything. Just your entire phone. I hope that this gives you another perspective of your digital media.
Exactly. And just a heads up to all the small businesses out there, be careful what you are selling.
Yes.
Specifically, like we've talked about, names, things that are associated with people. I mean, Disney, we've seen people, a lot of people will sell things for Disney merch or under Disney name. Be careful, because you can be sued by these big companies, and let's be honest, money talks. Yes. And money gets you a lot of power. So be careful with what you're selling and what you're imitating, because you can be sued for these things, and it could be very damaging.
Yeah, so just overall, this is a fun, light podcast, but it's also a cautionary tale. Just be very cautious. Be smart, guys, and, you know, you have it. Yeah.
And again, thank you for listening to today's episode of Informed
and Empowered
by Khawla
and Grace.
Thank you.